thank you.
Thank you for what?
The clarity. That feeling. It's been a very long time. I thought it had gone for good. So easy to lose faith. They come no matter what. Sometimes it even works, but this... You. All that you've been gathering. The strength of spirit. Surely you must feel it.
I'll work on that.
Welcome to Logic Gate. We are discussing Season 2, Episode 7. It was entitled The Messenger. I'm joined by my friends.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Jason.
And today might be a quick episode because did you take notes on this, Jason? There's really only two major plot lines in this. Like, past episodes have had like four or five. Like, this one that seemed kind of light on plot. Did you get that too?
I have about the same amount of notes, but like, yeah, there's only two major groupings.
Locations. Which would you like to start with?
Probably Yavin.
All right, so we'll tackle the Cassian Bix storyline, which is taking place on Yavin. So we see what an official, I use the word official loosely. There's a rebel base being constructed. We have a semi-formal beginning of the rebellion. They're building a base. I did note that the base appears to be made out of bamboo. It's very organic. We're not talking cement buildings or organized anything, but they're building, a base out in the middle of the forest?
Sorry for clarity here. This is the next 1 year jump, right?
Yes. Oh, good point.
Previously, we left off with Bix killed the guy that had tortured her.
Right.
They blew up the building. There was the heist on Gorman that went sideways, and Cinta got killed. So now we're fast forwarding a year later. Rebel base is starting to get established and...
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like and Cassian and Bix have moved to Yavin. They have like a little hut thing there, it looks like.
Yeah, that's worth noting. They're no longer on Coruscant. And neither are Daedra and Cyril, at least not in this episode. We'll get to that. All right, so let's just power through my notes. Feel free to stop me if I miss anything. Cassian has an unidentified blaster wound on his shoulder. That we don't know where that came from, right? I mean, it's been a year. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the last episode. He didn't get shot. It's not important. Maybe it's important, but it's not explained in this episode. Willman joins up with Cassian and Bix, kind of walks into their hut, hovel, whatever. And they're like, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. Where have you been? And he's really cagey about where he's been. I mean, we know where he's been. He's been with Saw Gerrera doing... space drug? I mean, doing whatever Willman and Saw Gerrera do.
Getting radicalized.
Yeah, okay, that's a good way to put it, yeah. But the point is that Cassian and Willman and Bix, they're all pretty close friends, but he's cagey about what he's doing, even to them. He mentions that Luthen has been trying to reach Cassian, and he wants to know if Cassian is, quote-unquote, ready to work. Cassian is... I want to say slow burn in this whole thing. And we saw that in the last episode too, that he's not ready to jump like full blown into a rebellion and run around and start shooting people. He's taking it a little bit more cautiously. Willman actually gets frustrated. His line was, all we do here is get ready. Luthen is getting things done. So I think to your point, Doug, yeah, I think Willman's been a little radicalized, and he's ready for some action. He's like, how long are we going to plan? Like, let's go out and shoot some bitches in the face. Like, let's kick this off.
I guess I don't know where Cassian's coming from here, because the way I took it was, like, he doesn't agree with Luthen's tactics. Luthen seems to be, aggressive and messy, and Cassian was saying that on Yavin they're building an army, and they're trying to get organized and all of that. So he was not wanting to work with Luthen because he's like, he's messy. He's a messy bitch. I don't know. But then later he like argues with one of the generals about like participating in the rebel base and like checking in and getting approval to leave, when he wants to leave. So I guess I don't really get where his head's at, really.
You raise an interesting point. Like, the journey of his character has been him kind of learning to be a part of the rebellion, how to step into a leadership role, and he kind of made some significant strides in that, but this feels like a bit of a regression.
Yeah.
I do see the catalyst for that, though, as Bix.
Mm.
So, I mean, if we go back, Luthen sent him to Gorman. Cassian advised, don't do this. And then what ends up happening? Someone else does it, and it goes sideways. Cassian was right. Luthen stops by to give Bix a job. Cassian didn't particularly care for that. It's like, look, she's hurt. She's broken. Like, leave her out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But then he takes his own time, and they go and they blow some shit up. And his loyalty is to Bix at this point, I feel like. He's not really into the rebellion. He's more into taking care of his own.
Okay. No, I get that. Yeah.
But it does still feel like a regression.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. We're being edged here by Tony Gilroy. Whether Cassian's going to, like, take a leadership role, right?
We know.
I was going to say. We've all seen the amazing movie Rogue One where he takes a very...
I know, but, big, like...
The best Star Wars
we're just,
movie.
Like, on the...
Clearly.
He's, like, never going to get there, but no. We'll get, we know
he got five more. Anyway. We got... Okay. All right. So back on track, we'll talk about... Willman shows up. He's talking to them. Willman has information on his iPad about Daedra. He knows that she was involved in the Ferrix uprising. He mentions that. And he mentions that she killed his father. Do we know who Willman's father was or how he died?
Yeah, he played a major role in the first three episodes, the first season. He was like, on Ferrix. I don't remember exactly what his role was, like a mechanic or something. But yeah,
Okay, so that's part of the reason Willman is spun up is because she killed his dad. He mentions that Daedra is on Gorman, quote, in the open, quote, she needs to be stopped, quote, she's a monster. So Daedra is all over a woman's radar. He wants to shoot a bitch in the face, I think, is what not happy with her.
And Bix sees her picture too and recognizes she's the one that kind of ordered her torture, as well.
Oh, I missed that. Okay. There is a force healer in the Yavin camp, which I'm still torn on the force healing because that didn't show up until, episode 9?
Yeah.
It really kind of felt like a Deus Ex Machina kind of thing. So the fact that it shows up here, I thought this was handled a lot better than it was handled in the... She's basically a faith healer is essentially what happened. She's kind of just chanting and... making people feel better. She's kind of like a camp medic. So there's a debate between Cassian and Bix. When Cassian sees her, he's like, ugh. Because Marva had a real problem with a force healer. No, actually what he said was Marva had a major problem with force healers. And Bix corrects him and says she had a problem with a force healer. Which I don't think we know anything about that, do we?
No, I don't think so.
Not that I recall.
Anyway, so the point is that Cassian sort of dredges up Marva as not being a fan of force healers. Cassian doesn't even want to talk to her. Basically, Bix calls her over and she kind of walks over on her own.
Well, yeah, she stops because she has a huge line of people that are lined up to get some force healing. And she notices, she senses Cassian in the distance and she she says, I'll be right back. And she goes straight to them. So that's the force.
She puts her hands on Cassian's shoulder where he has this burn, without knowing that he has a burn because he has a shirt on. So she detected it and sort of, closes her eyes, does whatever.
So just wild speculative theory. Is this more of a meta commentary on force healing in the Star Wars universe? Oh. Like, is Tony Gilroy kind of showing us... Yeah, I know not everyone's cool with force healing in general, but look, it's a part of the world now, so get used to it.
That's I honestly don't know. I mean, does anybody else have a problem with force healing? I just felt like we had 9 movies, and it didn't show up until the last one at the most opportune time. Like, where the fuck were you? All these other Jedi getting killed. Like, this never came up before.
To me, that's such a nerd take. Like,
no, you're not in the minority.
These abilities that you can list on the ability sheet. You can't have these extra abilities. The Force controls all things. It makes sense that it controls, like, wounds and everything. No,
you're right. It does make sense, but why?
Just because it didn't appear.
It's not the Force that controls all things. It's the midichlorians that controls all things.
Well, they've abandoned that. We're going to forget that ever happened.
The point is, each new iteration of Star Wars tries to introduce new takes to the Force, like different abilities or different, you know, reasonings for it. And they're all terrible, and we should just go back to the very beginning. Like you were just saying, the Force is a power that binds all living things. Sometimes, end of story, done.
Sometimes not knowing is better.
Yeah.
Right? Well, like, it is a thing that just exists.
They do that here. This, I actually really like this. This is probably the most significant part of this episode for me.
Okay.
Is like, this is the first time we actually see the Force, that we even like hear that it exists. So that's interesting.
I thought this was a much better use of Force healing than what was in episode 9, honestly.
Well, yes. Grogu, we know you did some Force healing too in The Mandalorian.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, a little bit. It's okay. Not a big focal point, but it is one of his powers.
Yeah.
And to your point, you're right. We really don't get a lot of the Force in the Andor series. But I think there's a reason for that. Because it's not about the Force. It's about all the politics and subterfuge and espionage behind the scenes, and not wizards with laser swords.
I mean, for all its billing, yeah, Andor is not necessarily a Star Wars show. It's set in a Star Wars universe, but we talked about this before. There's no emphasis on lightsabers or Jedi or Sith or any of that, right? I mean,
yeah,
this is politics, right? This is the Michael Clayton of the Star Wars universe.
Well, okay. So the Force healing, I think this is really well done. So, like you said, in the prequels, they kind of made it science-y and like tried to make it technical. But the real root of it is more of a spiritual and emotional and mysterious force that only some can tap into. And this completely aligns with that original idea, where this lady who has just sort of a feeling about things, and she says, you know, they come no matter what. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it even works. Like it doesn't work most mm-hmm. of the time, but like maybe sometimes it kind of does. But then for you, it was like a clarity thing with Andor.
She thanks him. She puts her hand on his shoulder, closes her eyes, like ostensibly she reads his mind a little bit, and she thanks him for the clarity.
Yeah, and I think this is important.
Oh, sorry. Something just clicked.
Yeah?
Rogue One. When they meet... I'm blanking on his character's name, but Donnie Yen, the
blind guy,
Force-sensitive monk.
Oh, okay.
Jen is all like, wow, he's so magical. And Cassian's like, he's a scam artist. They all are.
Oh,
don't believe any of that Force stuff. So he is totally not about the Force stuff.
Yeah. So even later.
I think this is showing us so that, you know, it's consistent with his views later on. We're showing, Cassian doesn't buy into this. He thinks it's a scam.
So I think Nugent's got a point, though. Now, whether or not she has magic powers where she can lay hands on somebody and heal them, fundamentally, this lady's power is that she's in tune with the Force or in tune with other people, that she can sense Cassian's inner struggle, his anger, whatever, which draws her out of this crowd. She lays hands on his shoulder. She says she thanks him for the clarity. Cassian's not having it. I mean, he doesn't really believe her. He walks away, and so the Force healer lady, as far as I know, she doesn't have a name in this episode, looks at Bix and mentions that she can see the pain and fear in Cassian. He's a messenger. There's some place he needs to be. And then she pauses, and she goes, maybe you're the place he needs to be. Like, okay. Sure? Question mark?
Well, yeah, she kind of mentions, like, most beings carry the things that shaped them. They carry the past, some very few. Your pilot gathering as they go. There's a purpose to it. He's a messenger. So I think this is something, this is Tony or the writers trying to communicate what they think about the Force. And I think it's important to what they're trying to say about it is that it's something that you kind of feel or tap into. Yeah. It's not a power. It's not a magical power that I can add to my like roster. It's just the Force in this world, the spiritual force or emotional or, but that has a real physical manifestation that some people can tap into. And I think that's a really good watermark for the show to have. And I also said that, like, let's give Tony Gilroy the whole Star Wars. Let's just give it to him. James Gunn. Like, come on.
Oh, just hand him the whole thing.
Hand him the keys to the whole thing.
You can have the Star Wars.
I don't think he would do it, but like, this is where I thought that this would be a great jumping off point into the basis for what Star Wars should be. But so I liked it.
To close out that scene, Bix and the Force Healer have a conversation. Bix later catches up with Cassian, and she basically mentions that she could sense the Force Healer's power, that she wasn't just some random lady. I think she's trying to convince Cassian, hey, this lady has some real powers, whether or not you believe
it. Well, his arm is healed, it looks like. He's like moving it around.
Well, so he's kind of like doing the windmill thing with his shoulder, and it's maybe a little better, question mark? Because I think even Bix asks him, like, is your shoulder feeling better? And he never says one way or the other, but I think the implication is that she helped him a little bit, maybe?
Sure. And I'll concede, it's weird that you'd have two seasons of a show and not really talk about the Force at all in a Star Wars universe. Like, it makes sense that you'd at least have to acknowledge its presence, but it certainly isn't the crux of this series, and I don't think it ever comes up again in this episode.
No, as far as I know, it doesn't.
So we've probably spent more time talking about it than the show time talking about it.
True.
The next scene, we see Cassian and Willman, and they are loading something onto a ship. And one of the other rebels runs up to them and basically says, whoa, 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 we're going to retrofit this ship with faster booster engines or whatever tomorrow. You can't take this. And Cassian is not having it. He was like, his line is, the day I can't come and go is the day that I'm gone. So he's not going to be held down by whatever these rebels' rules are about checking in and out spacecraft or making sure that it's had all of its maintenance or whatever. He's got something to do, and he's going to get the heck out of here.
I'll just say about this general dude that walks up to him, he was from Rogue One, which I didn't really know until I kind of watched something, but he's got some swagger. They show him like walking through the rebel base. I mean, this dude, he looked cool. I don't know. He had some swagger, and it showed, you know, how far the rebel base has come, you know,
Doesn't he basically say that if you want the protection of the rebel base on Yavin, that you essentially have to
proclaim your
allegiance, right?
Loyalties.
Hey, you're getting a lot of the benefits of staying here and being safe and being part of this thing. If you're going to do that, then you got to drink the Kool-Aid, which Cassian is not on board with.
So I think we're going to probably see more like familiar faces from Rogue One as we get closer. Potentially, you know, I'm looking at Doug. I don't know.
Next we see, so Cassian and Willman leave. We see Vel shows up and Vel has a conversation with Bix. And she mentions that Vel is doing the intake of new recruits. And that basically she's just kind of scaring these new recruits. I want to say scaring them straight. I mean, she's putting the fear of God in them. Vel was kind of happy about that. That's her leadership role, I guess, was setting the stage for these new troops.
Good, because she should not be leading any actual, like, field missions or any combat missions or anything like that. She's a terrible leader, so.
Well, the good news is she has, like, two lines in this whole episode. So she basically has a conversation with Bix and tries to convince Bix, hey, Cassian is a leader and we need him. The rebellion needs Cassian, because she's just letting Bix know that people outside of their orbit are aware of Cassian and his skills, let's say.
Fair.
We see Cassian and Willman. They come in low, like Willman's all freaked out because they're flying so low on this planet. We see them land on Gorman, and they are targeting, well, they check into this hotel, and What does the hotel clerk say, Jason? He's basically, he says, it's good to see you again.
Oh, I don't know. I know they recognize each other because he was the bellhop dude from a few
They're checking
ago.
In and it's all business. And Oh, and I wrote down his name.
Is it something like, did you want the same room you had last time?
Or I think so, yeah. Something, along something those like lines? That, yeah.
With a view of the plaza?
Yes. He checks into the hotel as Ronnie Guja. But when he hands them basically his passport or his ID or whatever, and they call him out, they're like, whoa, this isn't stamped by the Empire. You don't have the proper clearance. And he makes up some story about, wanted to make sure to get to the hotel before the curfew because it was getting late. I'll go get it tomorrow. They made a whole big deal about, we cannot check you in. We have to report all non-official people to the Empire. Like, you have to go and get this taken care of tomorrow. Like, they're not letting anybody on or off of Gorman without strict paperwork and tracking.
We saw the bellhop with the Gorman rebels earlier, so we know the rebels. So that was maybe, we don't know. It's all kind of vague spycraft stuff, but like it seems like maybe that was sort of the plan to get him in because the security was so tight.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's interesting that the hotel clerk basically says, you want a room facing the courtyard or the plaza or whatever? And he was like, yeah, that'd be perfect. And the hotel clerk goes, oh, well, that's unique. Most people don't want that because it can be loud at times because there's a lot of protests happening out there. Hmm. And Cassian basically, he's like, no, I'm fine with that. I'm a really heavy sleeper is what he says. So the ending of the Cassian Bix storyline in this episode is that Cassian checks into his hotel room and it's on the, I don't know, third floor or whatever. And he's looking out the windows and he's looking across the plaza to the Imperial base, where Cyril was working, and Daedra is there. They make a couple mentions earlier that Daedra is in the courtyard or is in her office a couple times a day. She has a very rigid schedule, and the Gorman front has been keeping an eye on her because they identified her as the leader. So what we see is that Cassian takes out his sight from his rifle, and he's basically trying to see how clear of a shot he has from his hotel room to her office across the way. They make mention of the glass is too double-paned or the glass is really thick. It might take two shots, I think is what he says to Willman. We actually see Cassian zoom in his little scope and see Daedra across the way as he's just trying to get his sight lines. And he has like some sort of spycrafty mirrors on the end of a stick that he sticks out his window, and you can see him looking like, I don't know if it was up towards the roof or up above where he is, and you can see stormtroopers talking. So there is, on his hotel, there's actually stormtroopers patrolling the area or doing security, because clearly, you know, there's a lot of protest, there's a lot of unrest in this particular plaza, so they are stationed there. The one thing I noted was that I've never seen this in all of Star Wars, is they had stormtroopers, they had they had helmets on and then body armor, but they had bare arms. It looked really kind of odd. I don't know if I saw it wrong.
I didn't notice that.
And you only see it like in the reflection on his little mirror thing.
Yeah.
But it's where I was like, huh, that seems like a military person out of their normal uniform. It just looked weird. Like they had bare arm. Anyway. So the point is Cassian's checking in. They're clearly making plans to try and shoot Daedra from across the way. There are stormtroopers everywhere watching.
Yeah, and we see Willman. This is kind of at the end of the episode, actually, at this point. But we see Willman is with the Gorman rebels on the comms, and he's talking with Cassian, and they use code. So
yeah, they do some.
They're working directly with those Gorman rebels.
It is notable that we knew from prior conversations on the Imperial side that this was the goal, to provoke the rebels into doing something that would allow the Empire to respond with a very heavy-handed crackdown.
Yep.
And yep, that's exactly what's happening.
That comes up very soon. So there's one little tiny scene with Mon Mothma, and she is going to work, I guess. She's going to the Senate. long story short, the Senate now has metal detectors to get in the building, so security is super heightened at the Imperial Senate now, and Mon Mothma's not happy about that. She meets up with Senator Oren, and they discuss bombing on Gorman. So the Senate is aware of the civil unrest on Gorman.
Yeah, the senator from Gorman says that they're like trying to provoke things. It seems like the bombing that happened was an Empire setup, trying to provoke things, and the rebels are arguing about it. You know, whether they should respond, and he says it's so obvious their lies are so bad about what's going on, and also tells Mon Mothma to like protect herself. It does look like things are kind of closing in on her, in a sense. So that's interesting in just that it may kind of force her hand. We know she quits the Senate and becomes the rebel leader or like a high up on a rebel. So it may be something in the situation that forces her hand, basically, instead of, you know, making that decision by herself. So I'm just curious how they're going to play it, because we know it happens. So, but I'd rather it not necessarily be like she's fleeing her life and she has to do it. So I don't know. That's what we'll see.
You got something, Doug?
Yeah. Just finish watching the season.
Yeah, we're going to just watch it.
Okay, so the other, if the Cassian Bix was the A plot, the B plot is the Daedra Cyril Gorman plot. We cut to Gorman, and there are several news reports discussing the Gorman uprising. There are mentions of a terrorist attack, so this is clearly front and center on Gorman that, A, these rebels exist and they are causing problems and that the Empire is not happy with them. We see Partagaz call Daedra, and he mentions that they are moving forward with the plan. Scientists have been working and that there is no substitute for what's in the ground. So if you remember, there was actually a flashback to, before they ever decided to go to Gorman, they mentioned that there's this calcite in the ground, which gives you a lot of power, energy. And there was a discussion back then, which would have been, whatever, 6 episodes ago, that they had scientists working around the clock to come up with a calcite substitute so that they would not necessarily have to go to Gorman and extract this stuff by force. But they make mention specifically here, so this is what, 2 years later, that they've been working and trying to find an alternate substance that will do what calcite does, and they have not found one. So when Partagaz says they are moving forward with the plan, it's because they've been trying to not have to do this, but I think they're out of options.
And it seems like Daedra is shaken by this a little bit. So I didn't quite get why she's so shaken, because she actually needs reassurance from Partagaz that, like, she'll be rewarded with professional ascendance to settle her nerves about this. And it's like, this is Daedra we're talking about. Her nerves shouldn't need to be settled.
Yeah, but I think that underscores the scope of what they're doing. I mean, we're led to believe that the extraction of the calcite is going to destroy the planet.
True,
like, right.
They're talking about...
It's a big deal.
The relocation at best and genocide at worst of an entire planet.
I think Daedra's also aware that the Ferrix thing, they hung that on her. So it's a well aware, I mean, at least in the Empire, that the Ferrix massacre or whatever you want to call the Ferrix situation hangs on her head too. So I feel like maybe she has a little bit of PTSD, like...
That's actually a really good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, I'm a bad guy and I want to get this calcite, but I don't think she's totally on board with genocide if that's what it takes.
Well, and going back to Ferrix, remember, she was really happy, like, being all smart in the meetings and pulling the strings behind the scenes. But then when shit kicked off for real, she was like, oh, my God, what in the hell is happening? I think PTSD is right. Maybe she's seeing this is no longer... meetings and planning, and now action is actually happening, and she's kind of flashing back.
She's worried it's gonna blow back on her, just like it did in Ferrix.
Right.
Even though Partagaz says, like, the Emperor has taken great interest, and everyone knows that you're the player in this, and you'll be fine, you know.
Don't worry, what could go wrong?
But, like, you can't trust these people anyway, yeah, no so, way. Yeah.
Partagaz mentions Captain Kaido. I don't know if he comes up later or what, but they basically mention this Captain Kaido character is a quote-unquote crisis specialist. So they have called in a crisis specialist to handle what is surely going to be a shit show on Gorman. So the Empire is aware that this is not going to be bad. They've already called up their PR team to figure out a way to handle it. We see Cyril talking to Daedra, and he reports a bombing in some area of Gorman that he cannot get access to. He can't get any information on this bombing. He's trying to get more information from the Gorman front and leak it to Daedra, and he can't get access to that, and Daedra won't even give him any info. He's like, can you just tell me what's going on here so I need to know if I need to go investigate this or get more information for you? And Daedra just cuts him off. She was like, no, I cannot give you any information on that. Her quote was, go home and pack and be ready to leave when I tell you. So she's in the process of running this whole thing reluctantly. Cyril wants to be involved, and she's trying to keep him out of it, or is being forced to keep him out of it. And then
they have an argument, and I guess I just don't know where Cyril... I also don't know where Cyril's head's at. Is like, he's trying to, like, help out Daedra and this mission, and then... But like... And the idea that these bombings are potentially the Empire provoking attacks. I mean, why would Cyril be so upset about this? And also later, he like meets with the rebels to like actually help them, it seems. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm loving just the motivations for all these characters. Maybe it'll become clear later. But like, what is Cyril upset about in this instance, do you think?
I got the impression that he's upset that he's out of the loop. He wants to be more involved. He was on Gorman before Daedra or the Empire really came to the planet. So he was running the show and, you know, I assume was a high muckety muck and was involved in all these important meetings. And then the Empire moves in and Daedra comes in and now he's cut out of the loop.
And I think he senses, I mean, he mentions this is what they want though. This is, they want these tensions to rise and deliver like these rebels and have them attack. So he mentions that's a good thing, but he also seems like hesitant about it and like upset that it's getting to this point and then goes to the rebels to help them. So I don't know. I get mixed messages from him a little bit, but
Cyril does meet some random, I believe, lady in an alley. Do we know who that was?
Enza Rylands, which is the daughter of the leader guy, the older Gorman rebel.
So the daughter of the leader.
Yeah.
He meets her in a dark alley. Nothing creepy about that. And he tells her that she's being manipulated by outside adversaries.
It looks like he even intercepts her. He like grabs her, says he's trying to meet up with her and like, he suggests that they could like blame or lay this off on outsiders. So it looks like he's really trying to help them prevent this big, you know, this big thing.
Is that what he was doing? Yeah, I wasn't sure what he was doing, what that because, well, her response is she doesn't even say anything. She literally slaps him.
She slaps him.
And then walks away. He's at least trying to have a conversation with her, if not help her. And she's just basically like, F you, dude, and then walks away.
I don't see his motivations being any different. His whole thing on Gorman was that he was injected as a double agent, someone who would sympathize with the rebellion so he could get the foot in the door and find out what their plans were, and then twist the knife and push them to do something that would require a response. He still seems to be playing that double agent role. His whole motivation for trying to help them is like, hey, don't cut me out. Like, I'm still one of the good guys. I'm still trying to help you. And her response was basically without words. No, you're Empire. Screw you.
It seemed to me like they had already come to that conclusion that, like, she knows he works for them. He mentions, my people are aware of these outsiders, and we can lay the blame on them. It's to me, it seems like he's forthcoming with who he is at that point, but It is so, very quick.
So what we're taking away from this is that Cyril's cover is blown?
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I took
away. I don't think it's his cover that's blown. I don't think they know that he was a mole. I don't think they know that he was a double agent.
They know they got bad information, basically.
Well, there's that, but I think just in general, the Rebellion was like, screw anybody that's Empire. Like, they're the bad guys.
Well, let's wrap it up. There's literally one more scene with this.
But I could be wrong, because you're right. It seems like they're still... he was still debating with Daedra about his mission, and we need to keep this mission going. So maybe I'm wrong, and I said they got bad information, but I think I'm wrong about that too. The information they gave them was actually didn't seem to be there were any issues with it. They weren't ambushed. They just messed up themselves that mission kind of.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I'm just backtracking everything I just said. So okay.
So
who messed up that mission though? I just want to clarify that point.
The random Gorman dude that like took a blaster and did not follow orders.
You're saying Vel messed up the mission by not keeping accountability in her people?
It's not the.
It's the person in charge. That's the whole thing.
Who is the problem? The policeman that lets a crime happen, or the criminal?
You sound like Trump. I take responsibility for nothing.
The last part of the Cyril Daedra Gorman storyline is we see an armored transport full of troops arrive on Gorman. So there are military vehicles and now actual troops marching into the plaza.
So this is the captain. What's his name?
Is this Captain Kaido?
Kaido. Oh, Captain okay. Kaido. There's a little scene with him, like with those soldiers that get recruited into Gorman, and they're like really green, it looks like, and it's like it's going to be a messy operation. So that's the crisis specialist.
Captain Kaido, if that's who that was, Captain Kaido, his line was, there's not a man among them. And then Daedra responds, she says, they look like children.
Yeah.
Which I assume that's true of every army ever, right? I mean, because the people that are, you're signing up 18, 19, 20-year-olds, they're not going to be experienced, and they're going to look like children.
And he looks like a major creep, too. I think he was...
He's clearly a career military guy, right? So, I mean, he's been... Yeah, anyway. That's the end of that storyline, is that troops are marching in the Gorman Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Not a lot. It's a setup episode, but...
It felt light. I'll wrap this up. If I had to give it a rating, I don't know, 6 out of 10, it was okay. There wasn't a whole lot going on. There's only two major plot points. Again, clearly a setup episode, first of three, so I wasn't expecting a whole lot, but it wasn't a whole lot really going on here. It was okay. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll give it probably my lowest score so far this season, which is like 7.5. And I think it's mostly because of the motivations aren't totally clear. Maybe I'm just not reading it very well, but like Cassian's motivations and Cyril's motivations, I'm just getting mixed messages, it seems like. But yeah.
7.5?
Overall, it's a stellar Tony Gilroy, detail-laden, like perfect instance of Star Wars universe displayed. So yeah, it's great. Great episode.
You know, I think I would agree. Like, one of the things that I've really appreciated about the run of this show is the show don't tell philosophy. Like, we see a lot of stuff. It's left to us, the audience, to interpret and understand what's going on rather than the script to tell us, and then this is going to happen, and they feel bad. I mean, it's more dramatic that way. It's more intriguing. It's fun to follow, but it does run the risk of, I think, exactly what you just said. Sometimes the motivations just aren't really clear, and I don't fully understand, like, when Cassian gives that look, what's really going on in his head? I don't know. This was a bit muddled. I know that the format of this season means this is a setup episode, but if I'm being frankly honest, I'm tired of setup. Like, let's stop setting up stuff and start paying off stuff. I'm probably going to go lower with it. Maybe a 7.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Still a great episode of TV.
I didn't regret my time watching it, but we've seen better episodes.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm usually very in tune with the character motivations in this show, so that's what really surprised me, is just being confused by that. But overall, yes, it's still positive things. And the instance of the Force being used, that's significant, and I think it's really well done. I think it brings it back to that original feeling of what the Force should be in this world. So
I'm glad it was subtle and not
very subtle,
beating you over the head with warping lightsabers through space and time or whatever.
And Cassian's not like the chosen one,
right? Yeah, I mean, that's there was a good
bit
point.
Of that, like a bit, like he's the messenger, but like,
well, he's chosen. Chosen to die in Rogue One.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it.
Okay. Logic.
Logic.
Gate.
Out.
Thank you.
Come again. Wait, wrong show.